So after you interview me, you can tell me if I am or not.
Okay. All right. This is Michael Jones, and I'm here for the Unfair Housing in Louisville Oral History Project that's sponsored by the Metro Housing Coalition. And I'm with Robin Bray, who is a real estate investor and is involved in activism around housing. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, thank you.
Okay, so I wanted to talk, this project's mostly about discrimination and different problems with housing in African-American community. And so I wanted to know a little bit about your background. Where'd you grow up?
Okay, my background, I grew up in the West Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky. And it was on 28th and Woodland by a single mom who had raised four kids. It's in the Parkland community. She was a homeowner. My mom was born in 1922. So I say that because I think that to be a homeowner and being born at that age during the time in which she purchased the home, which was in 1958, I think that shows volume to housing availability to you at the given time. We were the first Blacks on our block. And we still, me and my brother still own the home.
Okay. So, what year were you born?
In 1959.
Okay. And even as a child, were you aware of the different housing situation for African Americans, like the lack of Black home ownership?
Yes, my mother made me aware. Aware of it. I was more of aware of it. I would think I more understand around about 10. Mm-hmm. You know, she kind of explained and pointed out to me the white flight. We would sit on the porch and she would tell me there's another, you know, family moving, you know, and she would explain to me that they were, she called it the flight to St. Matthews. Mm-hmm. So that's my awareness at a young age. And at a young age, I was taught from my mother that housing was very important because she had to sell her car to save our house. She told me at a young age that it was more important to have a home instead of, you know, having a vehicle, because a home is a housing, you know, over your head. And so what she did, she sold her car to have enough money for the house, and then she took transportation.
Okay.
Public transportation. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So when she talked to you about white flight, did she tell you why did she feel it was happening?
She felt it was happening because of our presence.
Mm-hmm. And so you said you were a first Black family on the block?
Mm-hmm.
And so the families that moved in after you, were they African-American too?
Yes. No white families moved in. Hmm.
How do you think it in fact affected the neighborhood?
Well, I didn't see an effect when I was growing up. What I seen is that there was working class people. I mean, that, you know, it was two parent families, you know, I mean, it was some single one parent families, but for the most part, I was surrounded by two parent families, and they maintained the area. There were more of a manufacturing individuals. That's the kind of, you know, jobs they had. You know, we had it's industrial around in West Louisville. So those people in that area went to those jobs very close to them.
Mm-hmm. And so as you got older, what high school did you go to?
I went like, to, I was bused to DuPont Manual.
Mm-hmm.
I chose that school before busing. I got busing started when I was in 11th grade. I chose to go to that school after going to a neighborhood school, which was called Parkland Junior High, which is now called Johnson Middle.
Mm-hmm. And so housing and education are often tied together, especially when busing, because a lot of African American students get shipped out of their neighborhoods. Do you feel like that had an impact on that busing had an impact on the quality of the schools in the West End?
I think that it did, but I think before that, I think that that the quality was there. We just needed the materials, the upgrades, because mm-hmm. as I, you know, from elementary school, which is Parkland Elementary, to Parkland Junior High, I mean, the education I was, you know, just wonderful. The teachers I had were so supportive, and majority of the teachers were Black. When I was in the elementary school, we might have had like, you know, we had three or four white teachers, but majority was Black, and they took interest in us, I felt. Mm-hmm. So I have fond memories of, you know, really all my, you know, elementary and junior high. High school was challenging because we were brought together because wasn't a willing thing, you know. There was, you know, pushback from the students and the students' parents, and it showed up in high school.
So was it the white students' parents, or were African-American parents also pushing back against the busing plan?
It was more the white student and their parents and the white sentiment of having this happen. I think that the Black parents had fear for their children more mm-hmm. than anything. I think, you know, and then I remember being discriminated against in high school. I was homecoming queen, a basketball homecoming queen, and the first time ever at Manual, I didn't get in the yearbook. Mm-hmm. They told me they ran out of time. And then that was kind of, you know, I mean, kind of devastating. But mm-hmm. to me at that time, you know,
so back in your neighborhood, not going to school in your neighborhood anymore, did that pose some challenges? Or were your friends in the neighborhood, were they bused too?
Yes, they were bused too. Like I said, Manual was the school I was going to pick anyway. But I got mm-hmm. bused to Manual, and several of my friends got bused further out in the community, more, you know, PRP in that area, south. Mm-hmm. And that area was very racist.
Mm-hmm.
And so when some of my friends got bused to Manual, that was an inner city school. So mm-hmm. that Manual and Mayo was, I guess, what in Central, those schools had African Americans before. And then when you mm-hmm. went south, that's when it got difficult.
Mm-hmm. And did a lot of your white classmates at Manual, did they actually have African Americans living in their neighborhoods?
Yes, some of them, I think they lived not too far, I guess, in the East End of Manual off of 2nd Street. They had some of those kids that got bused. They were neighbors, but mm-hmm. a lot of them weren't. They got bused.
Did you ever visit the homes of any of your white friends from school, or was there a different relationship?
Relationship. Those relationships that was brought from the East End to Manu, they had relationships, but I didn't. Now, I didn't visit their home, but our relationship was kind of rocky, probably the 11th grade. But once we got to the 12th grade, I think things got better. It got better.
And so what year would we be talking about? When were you?
75, 76, and 77.
Okay. And so had you noticed a difference in the West End as far as housing, the quality of housing, the number of home ownership?
So you got to remember, I was in high school. So yeah. I guess knowing who owned a home and who was renting was, you know, but I think the quality of housing deteriorated more in the 80s than the 70s, you know, maybe the late 80s, because still you had the homeowners that was at the present time were the remnants of the individuals that they hadn't retired yet. So so you went through the 80s, okay, because you still had industrial labor, which paid well. You know, you had your rentals, your aluminum, you had GE, and those companies were most Black people worked at because of education levels, but very good paying jobs.
So you see the decline coming with post-industrialization.
Yes.
When, you know, I guess more jobs that a different kind of jobs that required more education, probably more skills.
Different skill set, yeah. You know, because before you had your Fords, so you had those jobs, and then you had, you know, laws that, you know, require companies not to discriminate against. So that increased the employment, you know, of African-American people also.
So how did you end up getting into real estate?
My mom, she told me they didn't make any more land, and she told me that that was the best investment. And I think by her telling me the story of selling her home for us to have a house, I think that resonated with me.
You mean selling the car?
Yeah, I'm sorry, selling the car, right. So that resonated with me to know the worth of housing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so after you graduated from high school, did you start studying real estate, or what was like the process of you getting your realtor's license?
I became a real estate, after I graduated from high school, I went to college. And then after that, I lived in an apartment for a year or two. And then I got married. So me and my husband, we, you know, talked before we got married. Instead of going on a honeymoon, we decided to purchase a home.
Okay. What'd you study in college and where'd you go?
I went to Western University and I studied, then it was called data processing, which today would be called computer science, or, you know, just computers. And so I studied that because I was introduced to that when I was in high school, and they told me that that was going to be the jobs of the future, and the pay would be good pay. So it's been like that ever since.
Okay. And so when you and your husband decided to purchase a home, where was your home?
It was in Newburgh. Sometimes some people call it Newburgh, some people don't. On the edge. It was off of Adela, it was on Delafay, off of Fern Valley. Some people in that neighborhood don't call themselves Newburgh, but it was Newburgh.
And what kind of neighborhood is that? Because we think of Newburgh traditionally more of an African American community.
Well, because where this was located at, it was a mixed neighborhood. So mm-hmm. when I went into the neighborhood, it was, I would say at that time, it was half and half. But mm-hmm. I seen the same process that I seen in my house that I grew up in. And mm-hmm. the process of slowly but surely white flight happened again.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that impacted the property values?
Not at that time. I think that the property values that in that neighborhood, they have went up. It's just that sometimes they went up a dud, but they might not have went up as much as the property values in other neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that? Is it becoming a majority African-American community or?
Well, I think that's, yeah, I do think that that has some, input on it. No mm-hmm. doubt about it, you know, that is the case. How we measure that is the only way we can measure that is by numbers. But, you know, and then you got to put in the quality of houses that the house, like, you know, bigger or made different or the amenities around it. You know, are they better? So those things do make a difference in real estate too. Mm-hmm.
So the process of buying your home, did you have to get a loan? Like how was that process for you?
That was it, you know, it was easy for me. My mom taught me to have good credit. So my credit was good and my husband's credit was good. So we came in there with two income earning people and we had pretty decent jobs. So therefore we didn't have any difficulty at all getting a loan. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's for everyone, but we didn't have any problem.
Yeah. And so how did you start? When did you decide that you wanted to go into real estate yourself?
We had my husband's grandfather had passed away and he had a piece of property and we wanted to keep it in the family. And so they sold us our first piece of real estate from the family. And also my husband worked with someone who also was a real estate investor. And so he was on board because he got to hear that every day when he's at work. And then I got my mother in my ear. And then the opportunity came in front of us and we were both borrowed up to be savers. So at that given time, we had enough money to purchase the property.
And so where was this property at?
It was off of 34th and Southern.
Okay.
And it was a condo. It cost me $15,000, and it was a two-bedroom condo.
And so did you rent it out, or did you...
Yes, I rented it out. Mm-hmm.
And so after that, did you decide, like, you know, this is a business I want to go into?
Yes, and then within 2 years, I bought three more properties.
Mm-hmm. All in West Louisville?
About two more in that same mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. All of them in West Louisville, yes.
So when did you notice that West Louisville was having problems like the deterioration of housing, the decline of home ownership, and that occurred to you?
I think the beginning to me was after the riots, to me, the deterring of West Louisville, period. You know, I must have been nine then. So slowly but surely, I seen a difference in our business sector. And I think that had an input in it.
This is the 1968 riots in Parkland.
That, yes.
follow Martin Luther King Jr.'s shooting. And where you live, you were living there, that was your neighborhood then.
Yes, I was 9 years old.
Oh, what do you remember from that?
I remember my mom telling us to get inside, you know, stay inside the house while the looting was happening, you know, and I didn't understand that part. It was, you know, I think it was very, you know, maybe psychologically damaging to a point where we kept, you suppress feelings about it, but, you know, I still have those feelings of, it used to be so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It used to be, I mean, we had, you know, two stores, you know, grocery stores, and we had banks, and we had meat stores, we had clothing stores, shoe stores, we had everything you needed, we had in our community. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, it just slowly but surely, it ate like a cancer. Mm-hmm. And when I ride to the community today, and I just can't believe that, you know, what are we talking, 51 years ago? Mm-hmm. And we let something like that just stay like that for 51 years. How can we do that as a city? You know,
well, that's why I wondered, why do you think that Parkland was never able to recover?
I think the individuals that owned the businesses was not individuals that lived in the community. Mm-hmm. I think that they were owned by white flight people. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that then. You know, I think that that was his. And then we had Black people who would come and step in and try to start businesses, but they never did flourish as, and then you got to remember too, we start having developments of the malls. So now you're competing with the malls. Mm-hmm. And then also, I believe in that community, which I didn't know, some of the homes might not have been homeowners, you know, mm-hmm. and I didn't know the difference, you know. That can be a piece of it. When they left doesn't mean that Black individual owned the homes. It could have been where white people, because I said they probably had the money to expand, became investors. So mm-hmm. if we could have statistics on the housing stock, then which ones were becoming investment pieces and which one was homeowners, then we would be able to answer that a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Right now, the city is trying to revitalize the Russell neighborhood. And as an investor yourself, do you find yourself competing with a lot of outside investors?
Oh, definitely, yes. I think because of what we're doing right now on computers, the properties are available to everyone throughout the whole world now. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we have companies who buy up, you know, 10 to 15 properties at a time, and they never seen them. Mm-hmm. They just do, they do pure numbers. Mm-hmm. Does it, is it a good investment? What's the return? And they might have a realtor to go and make sure, you know, it's structurally sound, but they just buy them that quick. They buy them like that. And that is, I think that's problematic, because you have individuals that doesn't live in your community and is looking at your community as a number.
Mm-hmm. And with this opportunity zones, probably a lot of those people, bigger real estate investors, are interested in also taking advantage of the tax breaks.
Yes, and that's going to continue, because they're going to just look at the numbers, and it's going to be competitive. You can't tell people what they can't buy. I mean, we are open market. Mm-hmm.
So how do you think this is going to impact West Louisville in the long term?
Unless we create and I'm not a politician, some kind of policy, I think in the long run, capitalism's going to win.
So as you started investing yourself, and you said you had like three properties, did your perspective change? How did your idea about housing and being a renter owner, did you have any new perspective on the way housing works in our city?
Yes, I start getting involved in any all entities that had things to do with low income housing. Mm-hmm. I reached out Habitat for Humanities. I've been on that board 3 times. And now I'm on the board also MHC, Metro Housing Coalition. So as I did it, I realized that I needed to give back to my community. And what I do is when I buy houses, I rent below market, still making a profit, but rent below market to allow people in that community to be able to afford the rent and my properties. So that's my way of giving back to the community, and also my way still of creating wealth, but leaving something on the table for people to be able to live comfortably.
Mm-hmm. The Metro Housing Coalition, they did the study last year, and they said we need 22,000 new African-American homeowners to achieve equity in the city. And what do you think that we as community need to do to achieve that?
A community and also individuals. Mm-hmm. Okay, because individual, to me, individuals create a community. I think policy, there can be some policy wrote around it. Also individuals, we have to live below our means. And we might have to do some sacrificing, like sell your car, take transportation, because that even happened, you know, you got to remember that even happened 51 years ago, you know. Incomes are so out of whack. It's just, you know, to me, it's unbelievable what you're expecting someone to live on, you know, and we need to close that gap. How we do that, like I said, I'm not a politician. I don't know how you do that. You know, you can change the minimum wage, you know, but at the same time, I don't want it to be a rolling thing. You change the minimum wage and then you raise everything up, you know, so, you know, then that defeats changing the minimum wage, you know. So, and then as individuals, we have to decide how we spend the money we have. My mom used to always say, it's not always how much money you make, it's how you spend your money. So, it's a combination.
So, in the properties that you own, do you accept Section 8 housing?
Mm-hmm.
Vouchers? Because one of the things I know with the people who are being relocated from Beach and Terrace, many of them are being given vouchers, mm-hmm. but they can't use them everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I've been involved with Section 8, I guess it's been 20 years,
mm-hmm.
at least 20. And I have had one tenant, she just moved out and she started on Section 8 with me, and she was my tenant for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think it's not, the program isn't more widespread, or landlords in other parts of the community outside the West End are reluctant sometimes to?
It might be reluctant. Also, it's number driven. So, like, for instance, if you buy a property in West Louisville, and it's a 2-bedroom, it's $50,000, okay? and you can rent it for X amount. So the return on that money is X. But if you buy the same property, costs you $100,000, well, you're going to have a higher rent than can be covered by Section 8. And the return on that is X. So you have to look at it from a landlord's point of view, is their return on their investment. So if you take a voucher, and it's a two-bedroom voucher, and the voucher is worth $700 or $800, and you buy it in West Louisville for a house that is $50,000, but that same $800 is not going to, you know, the numbers are not going to be the same from somewhere else if they have to pay $100,000 for that piece of property.
What's your opinion of the housing stock that is available in West Louisville now?
I think that West Louisville property values are going up, which is a great thing. I think that we have a lot of vacant properties that we need to figure out how to give in hands to social conscious investors to, you know, bring them up to, you know, living condition, and rent those out to individuals who have vouchers. That would help a lot. So I think that could help with the 22,000, you know?
Yeah.
I think that would help because the numbers will work, you know? The numbers will work because, as you know, I mean, through the pandemic, if anything that has been doing great is housing. And so now, you know, housing is getting pushed. The cost of housing is getting pushed because of interest rates being low. So now the ratio of housing being higher compared to what Section 8 can pay per month is, the gap is getting larger.
We often hear that Louisville has a problem with affordable housing. Has that been your experience?
Yes, and it comes back to, you know, the market drives housing. The housing market drives it. So when those property values go up and land goes up, that affects individuals for affordable housing because their incomes won't go up. I mean, income has a lot to do for affordability. And so if we can't, as a society, get the income to go up, then we have to figure out a way to subsidize that.
What are some of the things that you've learned over your career as an investor? Like something you know now that you didn't realize in the beginning?
I learned networking with contractors is very important. Finding good people to, and with a reasonable cost to renovate your home. That's challenging because if anything, that cost has went up a lot.
And have you, when did you learn about redlining, or have you done research or anything about redlining?
I learned more about it just recently. I guess I knew it happened, but I didn't know what it was called. And with access with, you know, data on a computer, now I'm able to research. And one piece that really stood out with me was the Wades. That was a family which bought property in Shavley, and they got their house blown up. And so when I did research on them, and I did the number crunching on if they were able to stay in Shavley and how much growth that they would have had financially compared to where they did move, it's amazing. I mean, you know, I don't probably have time right now, but I really have the numbers of how much wealth they lost because they was ran out of a predominantly white area, and that was redlining.
Do you have, can you give us an estimate? Like,
oh yes, I got it written down. You want an estimate? Yeah. So the property in Shively probably would sell for $148,000 that they got, that they got moved out of. Mm-hmm. The property that they bought in the West End, which I purchased, believe mm-hmm. it or not, this year, because the mother passed away, I purchased it for $17,000.
Mm.
So the difference between those two over 66 years is 868%. So if you divide that by 66 years, that's 13% per year that that family missed out on that wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant.
It is. And Shively is not that far from West Louisville. You know, it's pretty much on the edge of it. So it's not too far away. And what's your feeling about why the money, the property values went up so much in Shively, but so little in where the Wades moved to?
Well, white flight, environmental situations, the difference in the property. I mean, the house that they had in that they end up with, in the house that they left is a better house. Mm-hmm. But at the time, the difference in the price wasn't as significant as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the combination of those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, we touched a little bit on redlining, which was, you know, some areas would be targeted as it would be harder to get services like loans and things like that. And do you see any of examples of that or legacy of that in the real estate market today?
Well, I think the Wades is the legacy. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know individuals with the redlining issues today, but they are a legacy. Anytime you're looking at $148,000 compared to $17,000, and that's what they left to their heirs. Now we're looking at a difference of $131,000. Now you duplicate that process because of redlining to Black individuals that would have wanted to move to Shively that were fearful to, that is significant in the Black community. Mm-hmm. And real estate is slow wealth building, but it is the biggest wealth vehicle for all Americans. So that's why I think financially we as Black people have been left out of is because of policy. So if policy made that happen, then policy needs to fix it.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fear now among social justice activists that, you know, the African Americans are going to get moved out of the West End, that's what is going on with revitalization. And it came up again with the Breonna Taylor shooting. There was a theory that the whole police roundup that night had to do with a specific property on Elliott Street. And are you afraid that, you know, some areas of Russell, specifically close to downtown, that the number of Black residents would go down, or people would be kept from returning to the neighborhood?
You know, we live in a capitalist society, and we have to be very aware of it. And we want values to go up, because that's how you make money. That's how you pass it on to your children. So policy has to reverse what policy did in the beginning, back to the ways. If they didn't get blown out of their house, their family would have been $131,000 richer. We would be talking about a whole different situation if that didn't happen then. So policy has to say, you know, how do we protect Black ownership without affecting totally capitalism itself? How do we do that? Because that is due for taking away my opportunity to build wealth 66 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What kind of specific policy changes do you think we need now?
Wow, now I'm a politician, right? It can be reverse word, you know. I don't know. I mean, I got to look at it. It's like, can individuals, you know, get forgivable loans and money to fix up their property if they're owners? And, you know, if you own the home, then therefore you can get a forgivable loan if you take the money, put it back in your property, and you stay there for 10 years, you know, then it's forgiven. You know, make sure that they can't take the money and actually use it like a flip of a house. You have to, you know, maybe keep it in your bloodline. Something has, you know, for a period of time. That has to happen. We did it before. We did it when years ago. If you look into redlining research, we did it for when they came from individuals came from the war. We came up with policy to give them low income loans and forgivable loans. If we did it before and it knocked Black people out of a home ownership, let's do the reverse to make sure that we can hold on to what we have.
So another piece, especially when you're dealing with property, is insurance. And have you noticed a difference in insurance rates, like for your property, like say in Newburgh compared to in the West End or in other places?
What I've noticed that, if anything, the insurance rates have went up because they look at the structure, they look at the cost of rebuilding something versus what I purchased it for. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if I purchase a house for $50,000, I'm pushed into insuring it for its rebuilt cost. So it might cost $100,000, cost of material and labor. It might cost $100,000 to build it back. So now I have to pay insurance on $100,000, you know, piece versus the $50,000 that, you know, I might have purchased it for, you know, but you can't have it both ways. You know, you know, you want your property values to go up. So you want that value to go up. So when it goes up, the insurance is going to also go up too.
Yeah. Would you see that though as a barrier to some homeowners?
It could be, depends on their income, mm-hmm. the income. Yeah, I could see that being a barrier. But I guess I have to look at their income and the significance of the difference. You know, mm-hmm. where can I cut back to make sure that I can afford that insurance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the income piece is important.
Yeah. Well, you seem to be emphasizing a lot teaching financial literacy. And is that something you seem to have gotten it from your mother, but do you think that's something that we need to instill, especially in the African-American kids today?
I think literacy on financial also the ability to say no to purchases. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that because the time in which, you know, I was born and I had the mother I had and they went through a depression, their mentality of saving and saying no to materialistic things were much more of a driven force than we have today. because for me to realize that there's a woman that was born in 1922 to purchase a home, and she was a maid and made $45 a day and raised four kids and still bought a home and paid it off, and she did it. And we can't do it today. I question, what are we spending our money on? So literacy is important to understand by finances, but a manipulation of your mind to purchase is just as important.
And in our day and age with social media and stuff, do you think that's had an impact on it, because like now you can order something for Amazon and have it delivered the next day?
Yes, I think that we're definitely consumer addicted. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have that. You know, I mean, TV turned off at 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not ongoing, and we need to be aware of its ongoing thread in your head.
You talked about a couple of boards that you have sat on, mm-hmm. To do it really. What were they again?
Habitat for Humanity, mm-hmm. and MHC.
Okay, the coalition and stuff. And so what's been your experience in working with other people who are interested in the housing issues?
Oh, it's been very good. I think that I bring to the board sometimes on these boards, the individuals on the boards, you know, never lived in West Louisville. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think I bring that to the board, and I bring my experiences of, you know, starting out to me poor, and I've achieved and understand the steps in which, you know, one has to go through. And sometimes people on the boards, they have no clue.
What I know you're involved in some other groups, the West Louisville Women's Collective, is that one of them? Or?
Yes. The West Louisville Women Coalition. Yeah, that's where we started out. Now it's the collaborative. What that was is that that came out of the mayor's Lots of Possibilities program. And what that was is that it was his way of trying to tackle vacant properties. Mm-hmm. And so what we did as a group of women throughout the whole city, West End and East End, South End, Black and White, an age ranging from, you know, 30-year-old women to 80-year-old women. We came together with the idea of creating a labyrinth on Hale Street. What we did, it was a contest, and we won the contest, and that's what we came up with, the labyrinth on Hale Street. So that was really good, and we're still there. And so I think the program worked, mm-hmm. and we turned a vacant property into something that's very useful. We have, we give out at different times of the year, we have art projects. So that was very a way of giving back to the community.
And, you know, you often hear, like, we have so many vacant houses in this city and so many homeless people, too, that there should be something done about that. And I wonder, why do you think that we have this abandoned problem with abandoned properties?
We haven't figured out how to finance the renovations. You know, we need to have investors to come to the table with policy makers to figure out how do we renovate these properties. The investors get some profit, and also we give back to the community. So you got to be socially conscious investor. You know, maybe you could, you know, go somewhere else and make 22%. You know, now you have to find an investor. Go like, you know, I'm okay with 10%, but I'm giving back to the community.
And so is that more going to require like a public-private partnership or?
Yeah.
Have more, okay, public involvement in the situation.
Right. And when they're sitting at the table, they know that, you know, their purpose is to make money, but give back to the community, also.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions I had for you. Is there something we didn't talk about that you think's important?
I think we hit most of the things, you know, that I think that's important. You know, I would like for people to realize that with real estate and that it is a slow process, you know, and that wealth building, you know, I heard a lot, you know, it takes time. That's why it's called building. It's not something that is a swipe on the phone or a click.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So are you still as excited about the real estate market as you were in the beginning of your career?
Yes, even more excited. Because at the beginning of my career, I didn't see a lot of people who looked like me, who were Black, you know, African-American, whichever one you want to say today. Now I see more. But the cost to get in costs more than it was when I started.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
But thank you. All right.